out of my head. Damn, I'd be better off dead. Coming down.
That was some Mo. Welcome, everybody. My name's Ken Landon. I'm owner of Crossroads Brewing Company. This is the second edition of Hudson Valley Tap Talk. I'm a little under the weather, so bear with me today. That's why I'm going to let our guest, Tommy Keegan, is the head brewmaster at Keegan Ales. What's up, Tommy?
Good morning. Afternoon.
As always.
Oh, right.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Here I am.
Sorry. So we have Tommy Keegan, owner, operator, brewmaster, head brewmaster, all of those good things of Keegan Ales, as well as Jeff Wenzel here joining us today for this edition of Hudson Valley Tap Talk. I think we have some interesting things to talk about. How you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, man. Just came over to say hello, drink a beer with you, and see what's going on.
Jeff, you all right?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Just cracked that Joe Mama's milk, so.
Nice.
Feeling pretty good.
Nice. So what we'll do is we're going to go back to, we're going to play one more tune, and then we'll get into it. We're going to talk about mostly beer. Hopefully we'll get some good stories out of these guys. Any feedback is welcome. And we got one more Mo tune, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back, folks. Ken Landon here. I am excited. I have some very special guests here today with me, Tommy Keegan and Jeff Gio Wenzel of Keegan Ales, and we're going to get right into it. Tommy, I'm really curious. I know you've been in this business for, I don't know if you're one of the original pioneers, but you've been doing it for a very, very long time. I'd like to kind of...
Not quite that old, but yeah, thanks for asking. I've been doing it since like the mid-90s, I guess, is when I first started mixing grain and water together.
Well, that was at the almost, what, the beginning, the height of the craft beer industry movement, as you...
Yeah, it was starting. I was studying chemistry, or, yeah, biochemistry, but chemistry at the time, I guess. I've switched majors a bunch of times, but I went out one Father's Day and bought my dad a home brew kit and went back the next week, and I liked that idea so much that I went and bought myself one. And my dad actually owns a brewery on Long Island now, and when he gets up and goes to work in the morning, he is an attorney, so he doesn't like, you know, getting too much crap under his nails.
Is that where you... did you learn to brew from him? Was he a brewer?
Actually, no. I was living in San Francisco at the time, so we both started brewing
together,
but 3,000 miles away from each other. So I was home brewing, and then I got a job working at the Anchor Brewery just as a entry-level position.
If anybody doesn't know, Anchor Brewery is West Coast?
Yeah, it's in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco. Might know their flagship is Anchor Steam. People just think of it as the Anchor Steam Brewery. Same thing.
Good beer, yeah.
That is good beer. And he's the real pioneer. Their owner, Fritz Maytag, started the company. Well, he took over the company in the late 60s and was one of the first of the modern craft brewer. You know, he's considered the grandfather. So I worked with him for a while and then went to grad school and found out at UC Davis I could get a master's degree in brewing science. So that seemed like a fun idea. So after that, I moved back to the East Coast and couldn't get a job in a brewery and ended up working in genetics for a while until our mutual friend Mark Burford finally broke down and gave me a job over at Blue Point in Patchogue on Long Island.
Right. Yeah, Mark originally started at Long Island Brewing Company back in the early 90s, I think.
Yeah,
right?
He was before I was even home brewing. I used to go over to his place when I'd come home for the holidays and stuff.
Now, see, a lot of people out there, I think they think... You just wake up one morning and you decide, you know what? Let's open a brewery. It'll be fun.
I've met those guys. That's a great idea.
They don't
keep your day job, is my. You know.
And I think one of the better quotes I've heard you come up with was somebody kind of asked you your advice and what do I do to open a brewery? And the first thing you said was business 101.
I think, absolutely. Go take accounting classes.
Take accounting classes.
People always want to hear, you know, go tool around and backpack through Germany and go to Oktoberfest and you'll be all set. It's like, no, get your ass to community college and go take accounting.
That's true. It is true. It's
learn the difference between
road.
The red pen and the black pen. That's the important part. That was the biggest learning curve for me, at least.
So you basically were in San Francisco. You came back. You worked under Mark.
Yep.
This is back in 94?
No, it was after that. This is probably, I worked for Mark in the early, you know, 2001, 2002, 2000. By 2003, I was in Kingston.
Okay, so that's fast forward. How long did you actually work under, I guess, Blue Point, and then there was your dad's place is...
The Brick House.
The Brick House.
Yeah, I never actually worked at my dad's place. I used to hang out there, of course.
You know,
just made sense. I was friends with... Remember Norman Dixon?
I don't.
Well, it's not very good radio anyway, because nobody in Hudson will know who I'm talking about, so I'll just move on. But I was friends with their brewers, obviously, so I used to go there and hang out, but I never had a real paying job at my dad's place. So I worked for about 2.5 years for Mark. I found out about this empty building in Kingston that nobody would buy because there was a brewery stuck in it. Believe it or not, it was the home of the old Woodstock Brewing Company. Some people might remember that joint.
Absolutely.
And they went out of business, and the landlord was trying to sell the building and was having trouble selling the building because there was a brewery stuck in it. So I was able to come in and clean the place up and start anew.
I want to backtrack a little bit because when you say I worked with Mark, I don't want people to get the misconception that all of a sudden you just jumped into a head brewer position. Kind of give some folks out there a description of what you would consider working on entry-level brewery position would be.
Oh, yeah. That means I got to dig the grain and scrub hoses and, you know, run the kegging machine after I got promoted. Man, when I worked at the Anchor Brewery, they used to switch you from every payday, which was every 2 weeks, they would switch you from the bottling line to the kegging room. And I was only qualified to wash the outside of kegs when I was in the kegging room. I was handed a bucket, a soapy bucket of water and a green pad. And I would just hand them, like, just scrub the outside of kegs and then hand them to the guys that were actually qualified to operate the equipment. And, you know, 48 hours, 45, sometimes 50 hours a week times 2 weeks, that kind of got old. So then I would always welcome the opportunity to go work in the bottling line, which consisted of just catching cases of beer off of the end of the bottling line and putting them on a pallet.
That's awesome.
I wasn't
That's even awesome.
Allowed to drive the forklift. I wasn't allowed to touch anything.
Trench,
you know?
This is grud trench work. I mean,
a lot of digging.
A lot of digging. These are things that people don't understand because, you know, essentially when you walk into a place that's serving beer, they see the bartender hit the tap, and all of a sudden the beer comes out of the tap. And
like magic, right?
Yeah, and nobody knows exactly what the process is and how it got there, or how the people who are doing what they do got to where they are. So I always think that it's really interesting to talk about
And everybody loves the romantic idea of working in a brewery. You know, it seems cool and stuff. But you weed those guys out pretty quickly because it turns into a entry-level construction job.
It's difficult.
Yeah, you go home tired.
Very little pay.
Oh yeah.
If any.
I worked for free for a long time.
a lot of working for beer.
Yep. That's the step over. Work for free, then you work for beer.
Right. So moving forward then, after your stint with Mark, you moved into the Woodstock Brewery, right? You purchased that place that's in Kingston.
Yep.
That was back in 2003.
Correct. Yeah.
And what kind of condition was that place in? Like, did you have to completely redo that? Or?
Yeah, that's where I hooked up with Jeff, my cousin.
Jeff is here. What's up, Jeff?
What's going on?
Say hi to Jeff, everybody. we call him Gio. But my cousin went to high school with Jeff. So Jeff's been working with me since he was a senior in high school. And my cousin wasn't available to work with me that summer, but he handed me Jeff's phone number, and that's how we got together. And next thing you know, 10 years later, we're like brothers.
Now, let me ask you something, Jeff. Was the first thing he made you do was scrub the outside of the kegs?
No, actually. I think the first thing
we had way worse jobs than that.
Way worse, yeah.
Yeah, scrubbing the outside of kegs was easy living.
That was a welcome relief by that point.
I remember the worst job was emptying about 4-year-old beer out of kegs that have been sitting there since Woodstock Brewing Company had the space.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was pretty stinky.
That was a stinky day.
Yeah, I can imagine. That must have been a stinky
day. That was worse than digging up the sewage line in the bar.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty bad, too.
That was pretty bad. A lot of stories coming out. A lot of stories. This is like the real in-depth look at what it's like to work in a brewery, own a brewery, brew in a brewery. But now, Jeff, did you come in essentially with Tommy as a brewer, or were you in an entry-level position as well?
Like you said, I was in high school at the time. I was 18. The extent of my beer experience was working in a beer store. I worked in the local beer store since I was about 16 years old.
Cool.
So among my friends, I was the beer connoisseur, I guess you would say.
And what was your go-to beer? I'm just curious.
When I was 18?
Yeah, I'm a little older than you, so I'm just curious. Yeah. What was it?
I guess as far as mass consumption, we probably got kegs of Busch Light. But we'd always throw in some Magic Hat number 9 or, you know, Sam Lager.
Sure, yeah. And so you essentially, you came on and Tommy just said, you guys been together now 10 years, huh?
10 years, yeah.
Straight through or on and off or?
Yeah, I fired Jeff probably like 3 or 4 times, but never for more than like 6 hours at a time.
I would say 6 minutes.
Yeah, really.
Right.
It was like, you're fired, but I need you to drive that truck today. So
get back in here. So now, our last show, we had Hutch from Crossroads Brewery on, and Hutch described brewing on a 7-barrel system. So why don't you tell everybody kind of like the comparison between a 7-barrel system and what you guys brew on, which is essentially you guys are more into production, although you do have a considered a brew pub,
Yep, we have both, really. You know, right, we have a production brewery and a pub, but tied together under the same roof.
Tied together. So it's a little bit of a different process production-wise. So why don't you kind of tell everybody the size and what you guys are producing these days?
I would say the difference as far as our brew house goes is actually pretty small. We have a pretty simple system. It's just a straight mash tun, no rakes, no internal rakes or motors, and a direct steam-fired kettle. I'd say as far as difference, probably just the amount of grain and hot water we're actually putting into the vessels. We probably have a very similar procedure. I've never brewed with Hutch, although
now,
I wouldn't mind.
As far as size, you guys, what did you say, 15?
20 barrels.
20 barrels.
And then we have 80 barrel fermenters. So we're brewing essentially four batches of beer into each tank.
Yeah, well, the thing I would think is the difference is the packaging, not the making of the beer,
yeah.
Getting it into the what we call the bright tank or the serving vessels, where in a brew pub, you usually serve the beer right out of the serving vessels, which is nice because the biggest headache of running a brewery is the packaging department. So the filtering, the bottling, and the kegging, and especially the bottling. That thing is...
So
that'll make a grown man cry, no matter whose bottling line you're running.
Yeah, if anybody's...
I just died at Coca-Cola yesterday about that. Not to change subjects. On the bottling
line. Yeah, it's
line,
not...
Yeah.
It's definitely a dangerous
position.
It's
a dangerous job, yeah.
Your 20-barrel system, what is your... What's your barrelage production capacity? Where are you at
altogether? Yeah, we're just... Altogether,
so
we're doing
folks,
just under 10,000 barrels this year. We're
for folks who don't know, can't equate to a 20-barrel system. Essentially, at one clip, what are you guys
yeah,
brewing?
A barrel is 31 gallons. So what we'll net out of a 20-barrel kettle is just about 600 barrels, 600 gallons.
600 gallons.
Yeah.
And what does that equate to in kegs?
40 kegs at a clip. But then we'll do that four times into... each one of our fermenters.
So essentially,
160 kegs.
Hutch brewing on a 7-barrel. He's getting 14 barrels opposed to you guys brewing
14
on a 20,
kegs.
Right, 14 kegs opposed to you guys brewing on a 20-barrel system getting 40 kegs. So it's
no,
kind of,
getting 160 kegs.
Oh,
because we quadruple brew into all of our.
Oh,
barrels.
Okay.
Right, because
okay.
Our fermenters are larger, so.
So you guys.
Right, our kettle's 20 barrels, but our fermenters are 80 barrels.
Oh, okay, very cool. So you're brewing. Non-stop then, essentially.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes.
Depends. We try to brew like two or three times a week
to
and
fill
then
up,
package the rest of the week.
Yeah, to fill up one of our fermenters is about a 19-hour day.
Wow.
So
yeah,
two
usually
shifts.
You correct that into 2 days. You know.
Yeah,
2 days.
Yeah, 2 9-hour shifts by the time you're up and clean and, you know, by the time you have the floor hose down and all that.
It's a lot of work. It's
yeah,
a lot of work. I know, what do you guys think you're going to – I know you're doing some contract brewing as well. Is that correct? Or
yep, that's right.
Well, you want to kind of like go into a little –
what contract
the
brewing
is
a little bit?
That, yeah, between, you know, the stuff you produce at your place opposed to what you're sourcing out and then
– yeah, we try to do everything in-house, you know. But one of our brands, Mother's Milk, has just jumped out and has become our most popular brand. And we just can't physically push that much beer through our own little brewery. So we have a brewery up in Saratoga that makes just the bottles of Mother's Milk for us. So in our brewery, we make all the bottles of everything else and all the draft, including the Mother's Milk. Hmm. And I'm trying to think. We just did the math recently. Just this month alone, we'll go through about... somewhere just under 100,000 bottles, probably about 97,000 bottles.
That's in
of
one
Mother's
month.
Milk alone.
1 month.
In 1 month, yeah.
Wow.
It's like, when you think about it, it's hard to imagine that. It's about four tractor trailers full of beer.
It's a lot of beer, yeah.
It seems like a lot, but you'd be surprised. It goes fast.
And
thank God.
This is the contract, the end of it. So contracting is essentially... you have another brewery brew your brand.
Yeah, they have my recipe. We go up there sometimes if we need to and just kind of babysit it a little bit. But they've got very skilled brewers up there that know what they're doing. And we've had a good relationship with them for a long time now. So it's pretty automated in that sense.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, what we'll do is let me throw on another tune. We'll come back. I think.
Can we drink a beer while they listen to music?
Yeah, I don't think they would know.
Okay.
But what we'll do is when we come back, Tommy and Gio brought a couple of beers that they brewed recently. We can talk about them. And we should be right back. Welcome back, folks. Ken Landon here, Tommy Keegan, Jeff Wenzel of Keegan Ales. We just cracked open a couple of the brews that these guys recently brewed, and we're going to let Jeff Gio. I don't know. Jeff Gio? What is it? What is he like? Gio?
Either one,
Jeff?
Man.
Just by Jeff or Gio. We call him Gio because he's one of those, like, You know, like the Toys R Us, Jeffrey, G-E-O-F-F, you know? And when he was in high school, those cars, the Geos were popular. So he kind of, that nickname Geo stuck.
We like Geo. Yeah. We definitely like Geo.
Whatever you're comfortable with, Ken.
I like them both, so we'll call them every, you know.
If you guys need some privacy, I'll step out.
Well, we do have the beer, so that should get us, set us in the right direction.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is, Jeff, these guys brought up some pretty cool beer here, and I think the way it's brewed and what the ingredients are in these beers are pretty interesting, playing on a lot of the local aspects of what the brewing industry brings to us today. So, Jeff, the first one we tried here is what? The
triple.
The triple.
KD is triple.
Nice.
Named after our good friend Kevin Davis, who works at a New Belgium Brewing Company out in Fort Collins, Colorado. He was basically the originator of the recipe, and I actually did consult him on the formation of the recipe this year. So traditionally, Belgian triples are a very light-bodied, high in alcohol beer, and most Belgian beers are lightly hopped. So to get the alcohol content we need to add more sugar and to keep the body light. Belgian brewers traditionally did was add candied sugar. Instead of using Belgian candy sugar in our triple, we used a local candy sugar from a place called Michael's Candy Corner, which is right on Broadway in Kingston. It's
wow, that's
literally
awesome.
A stone's throw from the brewery.
Yeah, that's awesome. Right across the street.
I could hit it with an empty keg probably if I wanted.
That is awesome. Yeah.
So we added that sugar to get the alcohol content that we desired, which is about 8%. And very sweet, like the traditional fruity esters from your Belgian yeast. Just an easy drinking beer. Make a great Saturday afternoon.
So utilizing a local candy shop right up the road is the predominant ingredient in this beer, yeah?
Yeah.
Again, it kind of shows everybody what the local thing, brewing beer and using local ingredients is becoming just more and more popular. The other beer is that's a stout?
Yeah, that's our coffee stout, the Joe Mama's Milk.
Nice.
We have a local coffee roaster who's also on Broadway in Kingston called Monkey Joe's. He makes a specific roast of Sumatra for us that we add as a cold extract to our stout. This Joe Mama's Milk is kind of a big brother to our Mother's Milk, which is our flagship beer. The difference being that it's higher in alcohol. I don't like to call it an imperial stout because it just drinks way too easy compared to most imperial stouts, but it's an 8% stout with a cold coffee extract.
Now for some of the folks who are listening for the first time or really are not kind of understanding some of the terminology, why don't you tell everybody what an imperial is considered? I know it's kind of like an American made-up style, from what I understand.
Yeah, probably. Which most styles are.
You know, I mean, so an imperial.
It's just typically a higher in alcohol stout with a much larger body, probably more roastedness. It's
higher in alcohol,
yeah.
Right? Is just like a double IPA is
exactly.
A higher
or an imperial IPA, right?
Right.
Yeah. And most people would add a lot more grain to increase the alcohol, which adds a lot more body, as where we make up for that with brown sugar.
Nice.
So we actually use brown sugar in the boil.
Yeah, it adds a lot of nice body to it, that brown sugar, yeah. Besides giving the alcohol the flavor and it just thickens up the beer a little bit on the palate.
Now, you're telling me at the break, you're also telling me something about honey that you use?
Like to keep... It all started with one of our cooks in the pub as a beekeeper. So we started keeping bees on the roof. And then we had honey at the end of it. So we ended up just started making it using it in our beer. We make a beer once a year called Super Kitty, which is, again, kind of like an imperial version of our Hurricane Kitty,
nice,
or IPA,
yeah.
Or a double IPA. Or People call it barley wines. I personally consider all of those terms synonymous. And I could tell you the story about my teacher yelling at us about defining beer styles. That's another whole story. But yeah, we started keeping bees on the roof and just as a goof. And then before you know it, September rolled around. We had a couple of hundred pounds of honey.
Wow.
And so it was, now we really have gotten into it more and more every year a little bit.
It wasn't something that was planned. It was just something that
kind of... It was kind of, yeah, put together ad hoc as a goof.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we didn't really expect anything to come of it. Eric has worked for other beekeepers, and we were originally using their honey in some beers, which is, you know, very local, being from across town or from the next town over. But now, I mean... The honey comes from the roof of the brewery. That's, you know, I can't get more local than that.
No, you cannot.
Without getting stung.
Right. Exactly. That. Who's in charge of going up there and collecting all this honey?
That would be Eric. He's our beekeeper.
He's a beekeeper.
Yeah, he's our resident authority. But I like to go up there and play around. I bring my kids up there. Jeff's been up there a bunch of times. You know, we all kind of go up there and do our turn working with the bees when we need to. But when it comes time to be who's in charge of what the heck's really going on up there, that's, we call him Tree Trunk Eric. That's
yeah. Tree Trunk.
If you ever saw
sure.
Tree Trunk Eric, you would know why we call him Tree Trunk. He's
very
about
cool.
6 foot 11 or 6 foot 15 or something. Yeah. Like that. It's a monster.
So, I mean, you really, the local ingredients are, it's really awesome to see that you're doing that.
Whenever we get a chance, you know, it's hard to source all the products that way just because of the nature of our product. I know you're planning on having the guys trying to start the Hudson Valley hops guys coming in next week. I won't, you know, give you too many spoiler alerts on that, but New York used to be one of the hop growing capitals of the country.
Right.
And there's a whole contingency of farmers trying to bring that industry back, which is exciting. And we look forward to working closely with those guys as much as possible.
Yeah, again, trying to bring back that local aspect, purchasing hops right in our own backyard is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, besides saving the money, I mean, think about the carbon footprint, because right now we're buying them all in Washington State out in the Yakima Valley. You know, instead of trucking them 3,000 miles, we're trucking them 300 miles or hopefully 30 miles, you know.
And it seems to be a pretty big, maybe not so big, but more interest in the hop, local hop growing aspect. I know I've been hearing a lot about it myself. People looking to get more into it, growing, selling, being more involved in the industry. So that's great what's going on, I think. I think it's about time too, you know. At your brewery, we talked about this before we went on the air. You're doing only one lager, right, this year? Or is it a one?
This will be our second lager this year.
Yeah.
It's a Pilsner, okay. Yeah.
And typically,
mostly ales, yeah.
Typically the styles that you guys are brewing at your place. You want to kind of give everybody an idea what that is?
Yeah, I'll start, and then I want to let Jeff talk about the Pilsner in general. We brew ales because ales ferment at a warmer temperature, and that means the yeast works a little faster, and we could turn those tanks over quicker. We have a very small brewery, so being able to turn those tanks over in a 2 to 3 week period versus a 6, 7, or 8 week period, which would be required for lagers, would, you know, just, I can make more beer. And we already talked about how I'm not making enough beer to support myself,
right,
or our demand now. But we are trying, it's our 10th anniversary, and we are...
Congratulations on that, Tom.
Thank you. The lights are still on. I'm not getting rich quick, but people keep telling me I made it, you know? So somebody please call my accountant and tell him that I've made it, because he's the only one that doesn't believe me yet. But we are trying to make 10 single release beers for our 10th anniversary, and one of which is a Pilsner. And I'll let Jeff talk about that because he's got some personal ties to it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, well...
Should we not be talking about this?
Is this a lot of intimate,
moments?
All right, here's the deal. If she's probably not listening, right?
I think she is, actually.
You think she is?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is the she the beer, or...?
No.
Does she know who we're talking about?
No.
But you told her you were going to be on the air today?
You told the whole world on Facebook.
Yeah, that's right, I did.
So the whole world.
Why don't we play a song? Well, we'll talk about whatever you want, and then we'll play a song, and then we'll discuss whether or not we're allowed to discuss it.
We can go to a song if you like, but.
I mean, I know.
Now that everyone's interested.
The iron's hot, right?
I mean,
yeah.
I didn't want to do any spoiler alerts.
No, we can do it. We'll be right back, folks. Let's see what we can get out of these guys.
All right, don't go away.
All right,
we'll tell you something.
Welcome back, folks. Ken Landon here. I'm here with Tommy Keegan and Gio Wenzel of Keegan Ales. Getting back to what we were talking about before. She will be. I'm gonna let Gio take that one.
Yeah, this is Gio's.
It's all you.
I'm not gonna yet give up the name of the beer, but I'll tell you a little bit about the style. It's a traditional German Pilsner, made with what were formerly called Southern Hallertau hops from New Zealand, and it's really one of the it's the first Pilsner we've ever made, so kind of excited to see how it comes out.
Nice.
Yeah, I like I love drinking Pilsner beers. They're just, you know, really easy to drink, and especially on a hot day when you're going to have more than one without killing yourself. Like we talked about before, we don't traditionally brew them for economic reasons, but I love drinking them, so it's exciting to finally have one that I can put our brand mark on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, this weather kind of brings out the Pilsners and the lagers and all of that good stuff. Lower in alcohol, right?
Pilsner. Yeah, a little lower in alcohol. We're probably shooting for like 4.5-5% tops. But just clean and crisp and refreshing. And, you know, for all of those out there that don't know, you know, the difference between an ale and a lager and a Pilsner, most of the beers that you drink in life are a Pilsner's, the Bud Miller Coors, the big yellow beers.
Well, but there is some really. To say that?
What's that?
Are we allowed to say that? Bud Miller Coors?
Bud Miller Coors.
Soon there'll be one company anyway.
Yeah, I'm already annoyed with the Belgians for other reasons. So. Luckily, none of those companies, Bud Miller or Coors, are owned by Americans. So
right.
I don't think they're going to get this signal, but over there.
But oh, they're listening. You know they are.
Yeah, big brother, right? The big brothers are beer. But I do enjoy the beers, so it's nice to be able to experiment a little bit. You know, that's kind of one of the reasons that we really focused on making 10 beers on our 10th anniversary.
Wow.
Year, so that way we, because as much as we love making Mother's Milk and Hurricane Kitty, we've been making those same exact beers for a decade now, so it's nice to kind of branch out and, you know, play around with some other styles. Maybe next year we'll try to squeeze in 11.
That's very
cool.
11th
year.
What's your timeline on the release of the Pilsner?
Middle of May.
Mid-May.
Sometime in May.
On a Sunday.
And everybody can keep track, and you'll notify everybody about that.
Oh, yeah.
How?
Social
media.
Yeah,
Facebook, Twitter, KeeganAles.com.
Cool.
Call me on my cell phone, 853-4889.
Did you just give your cell phone number out?
Just to the girls.
That's really his number.
It probably is. He's going to have to change it after this. Oh, Lord. I don't know. It's ringing already.
It's terrible. Out on the other side of the glass. I'll answer it later.
That's terrible. Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. Oh, it's going to be like that song. What was it? Jenny 8?
8675309.
Oh, boy. Sorry about that, folks. I know that's about 5 seconds of your life you'll never get back.
I've wasted more than 5 seconds of plenty of people's lives, trust me.
But, it's awesome. The Pilsner coming out sometime in May, so everybody's going to have to keep their eyes to the sky for that one. Anything else in the upcoming future that we can expect out of Keegan Ales?
Oh, we've got a bunch of beers coming out, as we were saying.
Excuse me.
We've got a sour beer that we're really anxious to finally pull out.
Oh, that's awesome.
We've been aging that in whiskey barrels for almost 2 years now.
Year and a half, about.
Yeah, right. That's right. It was like October. And then a year ago.
Are those the ones that, the barrels that you have across the way?
Over in our warehouse. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got about
a dozen 55-gallon oak barrels from, are those from Jack Daniels? Where did we get those? Oh, no. Never mind. I'm trying to think of where we got those. We might have gotten them from a local distiller, but we didn't. We got that coming up. And we've got
any time release on that? That's one of my favorite styles.
That's
right,
probably
going to
be early summer, I would guess.
Yeah, maybe like July, June, July, something like that.
Year and a half?
Yeah.
Year and a half, it's been aging.
So far.
Yeah.
Kind of, I don't want to, I know we talked about a lot of things, a lot of styles and this and that, but this is yet another interesting way that your beer is served, barrel aging. You want to kind of give some of us an insight on that?
Well, yeah, you have that bottle that you just popped out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Is that
hold on to that?
Oh,
that
from
came
the last
out really
time we
well.
Were over at your place, right?
Yeah, that came out really well.
That came out great.
We've been using a lot of local barrels from a place called Tuttletown Distillery, or
yeah, they're in Gardner,
Hudson Whiskey.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, outside sure. of New Paltz, kind of.
And nothing really large, just really small batch stuff. Couple barrels, and then we'll bottle condition it and keg some off. We might have some available at Tap New York this year, though, for sale.
Yeah, that's next week, right?
Yeah.
That's coming up quickly.
You know that you could sell beer at Tap New York.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting this year. See
yeah,
people,
I like doing the oak age stuff or the barrel age stuff because you pick up a lot of the flavors, especially of the whiskey. It almost tastes like there's some whiskey in your beer. You're not getting any of the alcohol itself really out of it, but you get everything else from it, you know, because that whiskey soaks into the wood. And then as soon as it's dumped, we grab it and put the beer in it. So all that stuff comes back and into the liquid. And, you know, you pick up all those flavors and aromas and stuff. We've actually been playing with a way to kind of get more of that out of the barrels by bringing it in and out of the refrigerator.
Nice.
And, you know, the wood acts like a sponge. So sure. you get it warm, it expands, you bring it into the refrigerator, it contracts, and it squeezes that liquid back in. To the back into the liquid, you know, the liquid that's in the wood
yeah.
into the actual beer.
And
you bring it out,
it
and it kind of all that goes back into the wood and back and forth. It's
now
it's a fun project.
Essentially, this was a beer that was brewed a year and a half ago. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Was not carbonated.
Nope.
Was
still not carbonated.
Dispensed directly into the barrels. And just kind of socked away in a forgetful place where nobody can get to.
Yeah,
and
cool, just some cool dark corner of the warehouse. And just we decided, all right, let's forget about it for a year. And we tried it after a year last October or so, and it was delicious. And then but it just kept getting better. So we're just kind of waiting for the right time to worry about taking it out of the oak and putting it into a bottle.
It's very interesting. If anybody has tried any of the barrel conditioned or even bottle conditioned, you know, it's kind of like a fine wine. You know, you leave these beers in these vessels for, I mean, what is the time? Years and years and years.
Yeah,
right?
You know, the profile of the beer changes.
That's what's incredible.
Yeah, but they really mellow and blend together instead of having these two or three real sharp flavors. All of a sudden, everything's really rounded out nicely and. You know, this beer is ready to go. I'm dying to get it into a
Yeah,
bottle.
I'm excited for that too. That's one of my favorite styles. But what time we have? Well, we're getting ready to get off the air.
Yeah,
but I want
to.
I know we're having fun here, and we still have more to talk about. But we'll have to dig that out of Gio in a little while.
A couple more
but,
beers.
Hopefully,
maybe.
Everybody's intrigued enough to keep their eye to the sky and kind of follow Keegan Ales and see what's going on down there. They're doing some really, really cool stuff. I want to thank them both for taking the time out of their day. I know they were on the bottling line this morning, and they took the time out to come and visit us up here in Hudson. I want to thank WGXC for having us on the air. If it wasn't for hands-on radio, community radio like this, we wouldn't be here to kind of talk about our favorite thing in life, which is beer, I think. But yeah, thanks to Tommy, thanks to Gio for coming up. I'm Ken Landon. I will be here next month. It's the third Tuesday of every month. I'm going to try and attempt to do this. Looks like I'm going to have the Hudson Valley Hop guys here on the next show. I'm hoping for that so we can get an idea of what's going on in kind of like the agricultural sector of this industry. I'm always interested in that kind of stuff. Hopefully everybody tunes in. And thanks again, guys, for coming up. I really, really appreciate it.
Anytime,
man.
We'd love to come back.
Take care, folks. See you next month.